This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
The Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre presents Well, Well, Well on Joy, the show that's all about sex, health and well-being.
Joy, joy, joy.
You are listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, where every Monday night we discuss sex, sexual health, and the overall health and well-being of our gender, sex, and sexually diverse community. I'm John, and I'm joined by my co-host, Cal.
Hey, John. Hey, Cal.
That doesn't work.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Oh, those bloody Americans. John, welcome back, first of all. You've been away for how long now?
I was away for 4 weeks visiting, I don't know if it's hell, if it's purgatory, but, you know, the dystopian hellscape that is the United States now. So that was fun.
And you wasted no time in getting in the signature John Mann wearing political commentary.
Oh, there's more to come.
I'm sure there is more to come. Well, with World AIDS Day coming up on Thursday, the 1st of December, we're continuing our HIV Still Matter series this week as we discuss how HIV affects everyone. Tonight, we'll be joined by Australian gymnast, trampoline Olympic silver medalist, and advocate for people living with HIV, Jai Wallace, to talk about Kokoda Plus, a positive initiative in empowering the community.
After that, we'll be talking to Lisa and Alan from the Royal Melbourne Hospital's Victorian Infectious Disease Service, or VIDS, about the really excellent work they do and undertake at that service. And then we'll be joined in the studio by Juliet and Alison of Positive Women Victoria to talk about their latest initiatives and how they're furthering the conversation around women living with HIV.
My goodness, it is a busy day.
Holy God.
So we're no rest for the weary, especially John, who's coming down with probably a little bit of jet lag. As we said, with World AIDS Day this week, tonight's show is jam-packed. Up next, we'll be talking to Olympic silver medalist and Australian advocate for people living with HIV, Jai Wallace.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. I'm Cal here with my co-host John, and we're now joined in the studio by Lisa, and over the phone we've got Alan from VIDS at the Royal Melbourne Hospital. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Cal, for having us.
There you go, Alan. Good to have you both in. So first of all, VIDS, or VIDS, I had to learn you say VIDS, which is true, like VAC as well. What does that stand for?
The V stands for the same thing as it does in VAC, Victorian, and I is infectious, D is diseases, and S is service. So we're effectively the infectious diseases department at the Royal Melbourne Hospital, and part of the VIDS is the HIV service.
Okay, cool. Okay, and now Lisa, what is the core function of VIDS?
So the core function of VIDS is, obviously, as Alan said, we're the infectious diseases service, but one of the core functions is an HIV clinic that we run on Monday afternoons from 4:30 and also Thursday mornings. And so that service is actually a holistic HIV treatment, care and support service. So for people who want to come and have their HIV treated, obviously we have consultants and registrars there, but we also work within a multidisciplinary team with myself, who's a social worker, as well as Jude Frecker, who is a HARP RDNS CNC, a clinical nurse consultant as well.
And yeah. I believe we've had Judy Frecker on.
She's a bit fabulous,
yeah,
isn't she?
Yeah, she is. She's a bit of a legend, I think.
Yeah.
And so you may have touched on this here, but the service, is it chiefly for, is it anybody in particular, or really anybody that falls into experiencing either HIV or one of the other infectious diseases?
Yeah. Alan?
Yeah, so look, the HIV service is obviously for any person living with HIV, regardless of their demographic or risk group. But we also look after a large number of other people in the other clinics that we hold during the week with other infectious diseases related problems, which is one of what we think is a sort of feature of our service. It's perhaps a little more anonymous than some of the other services that are available within hospitals, and so we're not so sort of our clinics actually have patients who are living with HIV, but also with other general infectious diseases attending the clinics at the same time.
Okay, so that's why the holistic approach and, you know, treating comorbidities, things like that, you see success in taking that approach?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think with our location up on the ninth floor in the Royal Melbourne Hospital, it means that people who are accessing clinical HIV care can be sitting amongst other people and not automatically disclosing their status while they're sitting in the waiting room, which is a great plus.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how long has the service been around?
It's funny you mentioned that. Yeah, Alan.
There's a bit of a history. We're actually celebrating our 20th anniversary this year. So some of your listeners will have heard of, maybe you're showing your age a little bit if you have, of the Fairfield Infectious Diseases Hospital, which was the original hospital that cared for people living with HIV in Victoria. And sadly, that closed in 1996. But we sort of came into being as a result of that. But in fact, the HIV service at the Royal Melbourne's been going since about 1988. And even prior to that, there was a study set up by some of the doctors at the hospital with the Middle Park Clinic. And again, that clinic is no longer in operation, but it had a large number of gay men attending who participated in a study which was set up by some of the doctors at the Royal Melbourne, looking at people who were considered to be at risk of HIV, and this was in 83 before HIV was even discovered. So we actually have a sort of fairly long history stretching back into the early 80s.
That's kind of incredible. Look, we're going to continue the conversation with you guys about VIDS and HIV in the broader community.
Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Joy 94.9, and this is Well, Well, Well. I'm Cal. I'm joined by my co-host, John. We've got Lisa in the studio.
Hello.
And Alan on the phone. It is a packed house. We are doing our World AIDS Day preview with World AIDS Day coming up on December 1st. And we were just talking about VIDS, the Victorian Infectious Diseases Service at the Royal Melbourne Hospital, with a long history, kind of a phoenix from the ashes of Fairfield Hospital, if you will, it sounds like, celebrating 20 years. But it sounds like you guys see... would it be some unusual profiles? I think traditionally we think of HIV/AIDS as injectable drug users or gay men or men who are having sex with other men. Do you guys ever see profiles of people that are outside of those?
Absolutely. I think based on our geographic location, we're certainly closer to many emerging communities, certainly other communities who have experiences of being a refugee or asylum seeker experience. And I know, Alan, certainly at the end of Fairfield Hospital, there were quite a few patients who you still continue to see and continue to treat 20 years on. Would you like to make comment on those particular cohorts of people?
We have a mix, and if you like to use the term traditional HIV person living with HIV, and our longest surviving person who attends our clinic was diagnosed when the test first became available in 1984.
Wow.
But we also have we have seen over the last 10 to 15 years an emerging population of people, particularly from non-English speaking backgrounds, and that can also include refugee backgrounds as well. And they obviously produce their own particular challenges, both for us as a team caring for these people, but also for these people living in their own communities. There's real challenges and real special needs that we have to try and do our best to meet.
Yeah, I imagine that must be difficult. Well, one of the things that we've recognized as being quite important now is commencing or starting treatment quite early. Now, Alan, the people with these unusual profiles, are they typically being diagnosed earlier or later than the typical person? Like, what have you seen?
Yeah, no, Cal, I mean, that is one of the problems that we do see. Very sadly, the people from these backgrounds that I mentioned are overrepresented in the people who are presenting with late diagnoses of HIV, and they may be people who present to our emergency department very, very sick with an opportunistic infection. It's almost like sort of going back to the 90s in some ways and seeing some of the complications of HIV. And so there are various reasons why these people with HIV are being diagnosed late, and they're a real challenge in terms of getting a message out there about the importance of getting diagnosed early and getting on treatment early.
Yeah, certainly.
So I guess taking from that, I mean, where do you think the starting point is to address that? Is it in kind of the health promotion messages that we're getting out there? Should they be going to a more diverse audience? Or is it just, you know, reminding people, you know, outside of the demographics that you would normally associate with high risk for HIV to still be getting tested? I mean, I guess, yeah, you know, is it like a sector building exercise where we need to get people to think about testing for it sooner? Where do you think, Lisa or Ellen, I suppose?
One thing I think that's a huge contributing factor, particularly for people who identify as belonging to culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds, is stigma.
Yeah.
And certainly within the Victorian and Australian community, the fabulous work of Joy FM, of VAC, of Living Positive Victoria has been around reducing the stigma around HIV, but certainly in other communities, the stigma is real, and actually it can present some really, really real challenges for people to get tested, to seek out treatment, to stay on treatment, and to get the support they might need psychosocially around something like having an HIV diagnosis. So that would be something that I would say needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just a small one.
That little thing. Well, on that note, can Lisa or Alan, either of you, can you tell us about the VIDS Community Committee? What is that and what does it do?
I think for about 20 years now, we've had a committee that meets 3 to 4 times a year and comprises members of the HIV team in the hospital, but also members of the community, so that we have myself and Lisa and our charge nurse from the ward and Jude Frecker, the HIV heart nurse, but we also have representatives from Living Positive as well as from the VAC and from the RDNS, and we also have a general practitioner or sexual health physician with an interest in HIV, and we basically discuss matters of common interest, and it's a really useful sort of forum for just exchanging information.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think that's understanding stigma and the role it plays. I think that's where we see the voice of positive people becoming really important, and the ability for them to speak to what that feels like and how it affects them, and well, why it might be an impediment to people getting tested.
It's absolutely an imperative, and I think it's so valuable for us as a tertiary, you know, health institution to be making strong links and connections with community and peer-led organisations, because they're absolutely so important to providing that support and care outside of a medical treatment context.
Yeah, certainly, certainly. Well, I mean, you both have such a breadth of experience. What advice would both of you, I'd like to hear from both of you on this one, would you have for the broader community, people who are engaged with these organizations, about how they and we can improve the response to HIV in this day and age? Whoever wants to go first.
I'll start. I mean, okay. I think obviously our starting point should be the you know, what's characterized the Australian response and what's been great about that in many respects, and that's the partnership aspect. And the really important and key aspect of that is working with the affected communities and making them feel part of the process. And I think we've got a greater challenge with some of the other populations that we've been talking about, but I think the principles are the same. We've just got to work harder at doing it.
Yeah, certainly. And Lisa, what would you think?
Yeah, I'd definitely echo that. The GIPR principles, nothing about us without us. Yeah, 100%. And I think what's so amazing about the response to HIV within Australia is that beautiful nexus between community voices, the scientific community, working together to really come up with solutions that are effective. And you've seen that, you know, in an international context, how well we've done in the management of HIV. I mean, we've still got a lot of work to do, but certainly it says a lot for what we've done so far.
Yeah, look, it's really excellent to hear from you. Thank you.
Alan and Lisa, both, thank you very much. As we continue the conversation about how HIV affects everyone, we will be joined by Allison Juliet from Positive Women Victoria, as well as Jai Wallace, Olympic silver medalist, and the Kokoda Plus. Alan and Lisa, thank you so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the rest of the week with World AIDS Day and continue the amazing work that you are doing.
Thank you so much for having us.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Cal.
Thank you.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. I'm John, and as part of our HIV Still Matters series in the lead-up to World AIDS Day, tonight we're focusing on how HIV affects us all. Joining us now on the phone is Olympic silver medalist and advocate for people living with HIV, Jai Wallace. Good evening, Jai. How are you?
Good evening, guys. And just excuse me for my voice. I've just finished working. It sounds like I'm losing my voice.
Oh, hey, that sounds like fun.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
No, no worries at all. No worries.
Well, fair enough. Just to fill people in, Jai, you've competed as an Australian gymnast, as an Olympic trampoline silver medalist from the Sydney Olympic Games. And since then, you've been public about, well, one, I suppose, being a gay athlete and later as someone living with HIV. And I guess with that in mind, being openly gay and living with HIV in the public eye, what do you think are some of the mainstream misconceptions about people living with HIV?
Well, I think most people obviously go straight back, especially my generation, a little bit older, they go straight back to the 80s and the 90s and the destruction that the disease caused the community back then. And obviously we've come a long, long way since those days. So a lot of the myths out there are really to do with the campaign that hit such a chord and did such great things to raise awareness, but it did such damage to cause so much information that now is really outdated and misleading.
Yeah. John here. So recognizing the change and the progress that's been made, what now do you see as some of the main issues faced by people living with HIV in Australia?
Well, I am... I guess I'm a little bit of a unique story. I've been very well protected from any negativity, so to say, from both inside our own community and from the external community. So being in the position that I am, I really haven't experienced a whole lot of the stigma and discrimination that I know oh so well affects so many people. From the stories that I've heard over the number of years that I've been doing this now, and just even the part of being gay and revealing that to particular community members or family members is still such a hard decision for people to do, let alone talk about HIV and somebody coming to terms with their new diagnosis or with the diagnosis. So those sort of things aren't really sort of at front and center of my mind. But the reason why they're not is because I've always been a fairly open and honest kind of person. So when I first was talking to my friends and my family, I've always been just Jai. And anything else that's been associated with me, whether it be sport at school, whether it be trampoline, whether it be the Olympics, now whether it be gay, whether it be HIV, it's always been kind of in the conversation or in the mix. So although it came as quite a shock to my parents to reveal to them, directly to them, they're the only two people that I felt like I had to speak to directly about my diagnosis, it's always been sort of assumed that I was the homo that did trampoline. It was always assumed that I was the gay guy on the trampoline. Although I never revealed or talked about being gay before the Olympics, because I never wanted, I still don't want to be known as the gay trampolinist or the HIV guy. I'm always and always have been and always will be Jai first and foremost, and everything else that's associated with me is only a part of me.
Yeah, yeah.
Although it makes up the sum of my whole, it's always just a part. Well, and I feel that a lot of people lead with being gay. They lead with HIV. They lead with the things that tend to drag them down. And I've always been strong and confident in myself that I've always led with the strong and confident thing, and that's me.
Yeah. Well, speaking of you and speaking of another part of you, perhaps not all of you, but a part of you, this latest project, Kokoda Plus, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I guess the reason why it's come about is when I first got diagnosed with HIV, I wanted to scream at the world, know your status. Because if I hadn't known my status and my partner at the time hadn't known their status, we would be in a very different place. So that's the first thing that I wanted to scream at the world. But now that I've been involved in the community a little while, I've seen a new slogan and a new poster go up every season and not a whole lot of change happen. So I've wanted to do Kokoda with my dad for a very, very long time. We've got a bit of a family connection with my grandfather actually being a communications guy on the Kokoda track itself. So I've wanted to do that with him for a long time. But my dad and I have had a strained and tense relationship because he was always very much a blue-collar truck driver down the line, wanted to blow up Mardi Gras, former SAS soldier, knew how to blow up Mardi Gras kind of guy. So me switching on the ABC when I was a teenager to watch the Mardi Gras was kind of the real flip side of danger, I thought, because my dad was in the other room, knowing that he had such ill feeling towards homosexual, Mardi Gras, all of that stuff. So the fact that now I can take, now that my dad and I have a relationship, that I can talk to him about these things, and I can take him on this trek that I've wanted to do for a long, long, long time, but bring along other people that want to level the playing field. And I thought, what community better suited to leveling the playing field, getting rid of the discrimination, getting rid of the stigma, than the HIV community?
So it's yourself and your dad, and who else is involved at the moment?
So it's the HIV Foundation Queensland. I spoke to them about 18 months ago about doing something like this, because as I said, I've seen posters go up, I've seen new slogans go up, and not a whole lot of feeling or movement or energy has really changed amongst the people living with HIV. So I thought, what can I do? I can invite them on this awe-inspiring, inspirational trek that people come back from something like this with a newfound focus in life.
And
they're energized and they're empowered that they can do something that has such Australian story, such a strong Australian story. That, you know, Kokoda's kind of that army guy, that hetero, that strong guy, that if we can get on the Kokoda track, and if we can do it just like everybody else, as I said, it levels the playing field, and that means if people can come on the track, whether they're living with HIV, whether they've got something else going on in their life, whether they want to support me or support somebody living with HIV, then if they come on this track, it sends the message to the community that we are stronger than we think. We can do anything. And that's kind of what I'm about. I'm always about looking forward, not worrying or milling about what's happened in the past.
Well, on that, this is a pretty big endeavor, it sounds like. How soon are you doing this track? When are you doing the track?
So next June.
Okay, fantastic.
June 12th to 22. It's about 6 months away. And we've got the we just spoke the other day, and we're going to keep the registrations open because we're going to still speak about Kokoda and all the things that it involves up until World AIDS Day, which is obviously on Thursday. We're going to keep it open for a week after that. And then we're going to get down to the nuts and bolts. But the exciting thing about it is we've almost got 40 people that have registered their interest.
Wow.
So there's a lot of interest out there of people that want to support the initiative about leveling the playing field. You're stronger than you think. Not to focus on the negative, but to look at what's great in your life and work towards the light, work towards goals that are bigger and better than you've ever thought possible.
Yeah. Now, Jai, I've got one last thing to ask you here. If people want to get involved in this, it sounds like time is running out. Where do they need to go?
So they can go to NHIV or the HIV Foundation Queensland or my Facebook page, which has got the information there, or I'm just about to launch my GoFundMe page.
Okay, very good.
And I'm the type of person that wants to teach people how to fish. I want to inspire people how to be better in their life. It's not about giving them this gift. They've got to work for it, so they've got to fundraise. So I'm going to leave with my GoFundMe page, which is going to be attached to my Facebook page, and people can read all about that, read about my story, and that hopefully will inspire everybody else that's going to come on this trek to lead with their story so people get involved. People are invested, so then in turn they're invested in the trek, and when they come home they can inspire other people in their own circle, in their community. And you know, it's like the old adage, if you smile at somebody throughout the day, you don't know what's going on in their life, and you don't know what that smile means to them or what that will do to their life in their day. So I don't know where this will take anybody, but I hope it shines a light on whatever they want to do.
Well, Jai, it sounds like a pretty unique experience. Thank you so much for speaking with us. If you are interested, it sounds like www.hivfoundation.org.au. I saw it's on the homepage there. It sounds like your GoFundMe page is coming up as well. Jai, best of luck with the project, and thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much, boys. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Jai.
Cheers. This is the World AIDS Day episode of Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9. Up next, we're going to be speaking with Juliet and Allison from A Positive Women Victoria.
Joy 94.9.
For over 25 years, the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives have been collecting and preserving Australia's queer history. A not-for-profit organisation, the Archives rely on your support through membership, financial and queer memorabilia donations. To find out more, email algarchives@hotmail.com or web search the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. I'm John, and I'm in the studio with Cal today. Hey, Cal.
Hi.
Today we're joined by Juliet and Allison from Positive Women Victoria. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
How are you,
you
guys?
Thanks for having us.
So, Juliet, I know you're fairly new to the organization. What do you do there?
Okay, so I'm the Health Promotion and Communications Coordinator at Positive Women Victoria. So I guess I wear two hats in that I attempt to provide accurate health information to our members, and I also attempt to ensure that we're communicating the core messages of Positive Women Victoria to the general public.
That's fantastic. And Allison, you're the CEO, yeah? And it's just the two of you at the organization, is that correct?
And we have Heather Magwagwa, who's our peer support worker, who unfortunately can't be here tonight, a very, very key part of our team at Positive Women Victoria.
That's really excellent.
For someone who's not familiar, I mean, with obviously John and I are pretty familiar being at VAC and working with you guys regularly, but what is the core work of Positive Women Victoria?
So we're the only community-based organisation in Australia that provides advocacy and support for women living with HIV. Mm. So we're very pleased to be funded by the Department of Health and Human Services here in Victoria. But because we are the only organisation nationally that specifically supports women, we have a national reach, and we have members in New South Wales, South Australia, Queensland and Tasmania.
Mm. That's great to hear that network is actually built up.
Yes, yeah,
absolutely.
Has.
I think we have in our member base roughly a third of all women in Victoria living with HIV are part of Positive Women Victoria, which is fantastic.
Yeah, wow.
So just for some perspective, what does that population look like size-wise?
So women in Australia living with HIV are roughly 10% of the total population of people living with HIV.
Wow.
I think that equates to the latest sort of estimates at roughly about 2,900 women.
Okay.
Wow.
And in Victoria, I think we're looking at a population
about 600 to 700.
600 to 700 women.
Women.
Yeah.
Man, that's remarkable.
And in this show, you know, we were talking about the theme is HIV affects everyone. And I guess we were talking too, when we were talking to Lisa and Alan from VIDS at Royal Melbourne Hospital, a lot of people think, you know, your highest risk group is really gay men and MSM. And I guess you guys would know better than anyone else. Do you think that what's the perception of as far as the risk and that identity of like positive women being out there? How do you think that factors in?
Yeah, it's a really good question. When you're thinking about risk and HIV risk and women living with HIV, it's really a double-layered kind of risk, because there's the physical risk experienced by women as a result of the way the virus is transmitted, but you've also got the risks that women experience as a result of their gender. Yeah. So for women living with HIV, their HIV status is actually superimposed on the existing disadvantage that women across the board experience because women live in a gendered social system. So, you know, this risk translates into so many aspects of a woman's life. It's her economic, the economic inequities that women experience, the inequities around maybe cultural status, and also the horrible risk that we're hearing about more and more these days around intimate partner violence and gender-based violence, which affects up to 1 in 3 women over their lifetime.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's really important when we're talking about risk and risk of transmission that we understand that gender inequity adds that layer that really complicates a woman's agency to make choices and manage her HIV risk. So negotiating things like condom use, utilising PrEP, accessing testing and treatment services, all hugely important within our response to the epidemic, but out of reach for women if they are experiencing those significant impacts of gender inequity, so particularly violence, which, as we know from the evidence, has a bit of a two-way relationship with HIV risk as well. So women living with HIV are more likely to be experiencing intimate partner violence, but on the same account, HIV is a risk factor for intimate partner violence.
It should go without saying that obviously women, the voices of women who are living with HIV are important to hear, but can you explain to us just why that is and explain, like you're talking about these unique experiences to women, why is it important for us to hear from women directly about their risk, but also if they're living with HIV, what it's like for them?
Yeah, another really good question. I guess those of us working in the sector understand that meaningful involvement of affected populations is a hugely important philosophy that underpins the work right across the sector. But often we see that women are not meaningfully involved in discussions around HIV, and they tend to be a fairly marginalised population within this sector. And that can be for a range of reasons. Sometimes it's around the fact that the kind of dominant narratives that work well for the overall population of people living with HIV don't work so well for women. And so women tend to be, you know, to be quite marginalised and to have quite different and unique needs to men, for example, living with HIV.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think you've touched upon some of those, but can you kind of go into more detail about what those unique needs are?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess, so in terms of some of those differing structural drivers, a tricky concept. Yeah, I know. Let's get really deep. So looking at something like Futures and Futures 8, thinking about women living with HIV, we know that roughly 51% of women surveyed indicated that Social Security was their main source of income, and that 34% were living in a household with a yearly income below $30,000. So more likely to be living below the poverty line if you're a woman living with HIV.
God. Now, really, this is the Futures study from La Trobe University. Yeah,
yeah, it's come out last week, launched at ASHM, the most recent Futures 8 it was. Yeah.
Okay. That's, sorry, back to the what matters.
That's okay. It's a pretty startling explanation. But I guess a really important thing is that women don't experience the same culture of testing that's been so important in regards to our response to HIV. Many have never had an HIV test prior to their diagnosis.
Yeah.
And the majority have reported that their reason for testing in the first place is often that a partner has tested positive or that they've fallen ill.
Yeah.
And that, of course, then manifests in what we're seeing in Kirby. So we're seeing a higher proportion of women who are diagnosed late.
Yeah.
We also know that women tend to present with a higher likelihood of an AIDS-defining illness. So a significant impact on their health by the time they do present themselves.
Yeah. The other really critical thing that affects women living with HIV is that they often experience unwanted disclosure of their status, and that can be in the context of a healthcare setting. It often is in the context of a healthcare setting or in a range of other settings.
Yeah, I think it's frustrating to hear all this.
Yeah.
So it sounds like there might be some work to do even kind of in healthcare workers and frontline workers with regard to that disclosure and being sensitive to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that we also see in our work with women is that women are more likely to be diagnosed away from, I guess, one of the specialist HIV settings. Mm. So, you know, just in a general practice, maybe not necessarily a practice where they're used to seeing people living with HIV. And so the way the news is given to the women and the way the staff handle the giving of that information can be sort of less than optimal, and, yeah, and women can really suffer as a result of that.
Oh, that's... Well,
it sounds like we probably need to have you come back in the show to really unpack all
of
this.
We'd love to come back.
Well, look, everyone listening can know we will make that happen because it sounds like there's a lot more to touch on. One big question, and then we're going to ask you one other follow up after this. But what would you like to see? What is the biggest thing you'd like to see change in the response to HIV with regard to positive women?
That's a really easy one for us to answer because at the moment, as you may know, women are not recognised as a priority population in their own right in the national HIV strategy. And because of that, the fact women are not underrepresented in research, in policy. And so if we could change one thing, it would be to have women included as a priority population in the national HIV strategy.
Beautifully put. And my follow-up is this. How are we including women on Thursday, being World AIDS Day?
Well, there's a lot happening on Thursday, isn't there, Julia?
There's a whole lot happening. So we've been really fortunate in being able to partner with Alfred Health to host a Women in HIV breakfast. So that's first up in the morning, bright and early, at 8 a.m.
Oh.
Yes. And so at the breakfast, we'll be having some positive speakers and we'll be discussing our partnership with Alfred Health and how they support women living with HIV. But we'll also be presenting our Story Wall project. So that's a unique project that we put together detailing some of the experiences and reflections of women living with HIV, but also women working in the HIV sector, because there's quite a powerful chorus of women within the sector who work incredibly hard to affect our HIV response. And we wanted to recognise both these groups of women in concert and really celebrate their contribution to the space.
I think that's a really good point. Yeah. And we've talked about this on the show before. We were talking about a lot of our guests we've had. We've had Sharon Lewin and Edwina Wright, both women, both leading, you know, on the doctor side, the researcher side of this.
Absolutely.
Alison Thorne, who was one of our original board members, you know, was a very, I think she said she was an out and proud lesbian when she started, was really a founding member of VAC. And, you know, obviously been critical in the response. So it's great to really honor that. That contribution by women, because it has been significant and continues to be. So if people want to get involved, how do they get involved on those two events? Do they need to RSVP or just rock up?
They do. They need to RSVP. So the Women's Breakfast, the invitations have been sent out to women in the sector and our members. For the rest of the day, we're also very much a part of the launch and the forum, which is also being held, thankfully, at the Alfred, so we don't have to move locations. we will have Heather McGuagua, who we mentioned earlier, who's our peer support coordinator, will be speaking as part of the forum for the official Victorian launch and forum for the day, the community forum.
And I think that forum is open to everybody and happening at 10 o'clock, is it?
Yeah, it's actually the official community launch is at 9. Then there will be some speakers, the women of the HIV response, actually. We have Jill Hennessy, the health minister, speaking, Edwina Wright from the Alfred, some positive speakers, as you mentioned. Then the community forum, moderated by Rowena Allen, the Commissioner for Gender and Sexuality. That's a mouthful. we'll be talking, the theme is called HIV, Then and Now, No One Left Behind. RSVP at www.worldaidsday.com.au, and some further events later in the night that we'll talk about a bit later. But yeah, there's a lot going on.
There is a lot. And the MHIVE forum in the afternoon, the focus of the MHIVE forum is on women as well.
Oh, fantastic.
So it's a big day for women.
Absolutely.
On Thursday.
Yeah, yeah. It should be.
Look, before we wrap up the show, I should plug for women in regional and rural areas as well. And anyone living with HIV or affected by HIV, which is pretty much everyone, as we've now found over the course of the show. Bendigo is having a few events at VAC Country. There's community barbecue actually happening tomorrow, AIDS Quilt exhibition and launch, and plus documentary and panel discussion happening on World AIDS Day, Thursday the 1st of December. Those are happening. Check out VAC Country on Facebook or vac.org.au/VAC Country. And of course, in the evening, we will also have the World AIDS Day Memorial, John. right?
That is correct. It happens every year. It will be at the Positive Living Center, which is at Commercial Road in South Yarra, the Braille Library. That's, again, Thursday. It starts at 6:30 p.m., but the doors open at 5:30. There will be the AIDS quilt on display. There will be food. There will be art. There will be music. But there will be remembrance and, I think, a lot of happy tears. But it's a really good event, and we encourage everybody to go and share their experience.
And on a final note, if you do nothing else and you are in Melbourne CBD, make sure you look out for the VAC volunteers and grab yourself a World AIDS Day ribbon and wear it on the day to keep that awareness going, that HIV still matters. Allison, Juliet, thank you so much for joining us on Well, Well, Well. It's been a pleasure, and we will definitely have you back.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
If you missed any of this episode or any episode of Well, 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 be sure to check out our podcast put together by the lovely David every week. Just head to www.joy.org.au/well-well-well. The Well, Well, Well team is back next Monday night from 8 p.m. here on Joy 94.9. Until then, do take care, and up next is Broad.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.